is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
So welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Bacon. And today, I'm really happy to kick off a new series that we're just starting out called the Member Spotlight. And I'm really, really happy to have Tanner Wortham, who is an Agile practitioner based in the Silicon Valley out in California. He is a senior scrum master out at study.com, and he writes an awesome blog, Spikes and Stories. Tanner and I found each other, I think, this spring sometime. I read one of his blog posts, and so I hit him up on LinkedIn. I was like, hey, man, you write some good stuff. Keep it up. And we had an exchange from there. So we're really happy to have you on the podcast today, Tanner. And thanks very much for taking the time. And Happy New Year to you. It's New Year's Day. So Happy New Year.
Happy New Year too, and everybody else out there.
Thanks. So why don't we start? Just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, kind of maybe where you work now and how you got into Agile and kind of how you got into this whole community.
So I work at study.com right now. I help them through their people problems and help them with their Agile adoption. Mm-hmm. I got started in a weird way. I saw what Agile looked like before I even knew what it was called. And it all started when I was in the Marine Corps. So surprisingly enough for me, or at least I thought it was unique, was how Agile the Marine Corps was. You know, it wasn't later until I actually heard what Agile was. For me, it was just leading Marines. And then when I talked to Jeff Sutherland once, you know, it was interesting to hear the history of Scrum. And when I talked to him and I asked him about his book, he was like, yeah, one of the first people I talked to and asked for a quote was General McCarthy. Hmm. So it was interesting that, you know, much of the history of Scrum came from the military. So again, my start came from the military. I started doing it when I became a civilian in about 2006, mm-hmm. Started as a software engineer, then sort of accidentally fell into project management, and then somebody accused me of being agile, so I went and looked up what that was. And then I just kept doing it and kept breathing it, helped several organizations with their own agile adoption, from the airline industry to the gaming industry when I was out in Reno. So Lived and worked in many places, a lot of fun. I've been enjoying all of it.
That's awesome. And so what brought you, did you move for the gig at study.com or?
Yeah, at the time I was out in Reno, There was a buddy of mine who came out to study.com and he was asking about the Atlassian Summit because he knew I had gone before. And I'm like, oh, let me tell you about it. And then I'm like, why are you no longer with us? Where'd you go? So then he was like, you know, we got a Scrum Master opening at this company. So I'm like, I checked it out. My wife was like, we're never moving to California. And then a few weeks later, I'm like, honey, they offered me the job. What are we going to do?
Yeah. So one of the interesting things I read on your blog was that you take the train a pretty long distance to the office every day. And that's sort of writing on the train is maybe an outlet to pass the time. How did that start? Like, how did you...
My boss, Jim, I used to write blogs internal to our company, and he was like, you should share these. I'm like, nobody would care to hear something random. But then I had nothing to do on the train one day, so I had my laptop with me, and the commute's about 2 hours from Mountain View, where I work, for about
each way, right?
One way.
Okay. So you got some quality train time.
Yeah, it really is. 1 hour one way, and we're about 5 miles from Google's office, and LinkedIn is right nearby. Facebook, I believe, isn't too far away. Apple's not too far away. Right in the center of it. But it's really crowded there. So we live in a small town called Morgan Hill, about an hour away. So I ride on the train. It's not too exciting. You got to occupy the time, and I do it with reading and writing.
Yeah. Well, I've read a lot of your posts, and I have to say they're really good. It's great to read kind of other people's perspectives. You know, one thing that I was really interested in is, since you're all the way across the country, you know, I live in Virginia, which is an area that's sort of very heavy government. We do have a pretty thriving commercial sort of presence here, but a lot of people think about Washington, D.C. They just think about federal government and all that sort of stuff. You know, and me living in Virginia, I hear like, oh, Silicon Valley all the time. You know, I hear all these startups and the San Fran sort of scene. And so when I was reading your stuff, you know, one of your taglines is like, stories or whatever from a Scrum Master or coach in Silicon Valley. I was instantly sort of drawn to it. But like, oh, I wonder if he's sort of facing the same sort of things that I'm seeing, you know, all the way across the country. And it's been cool to sort of see that some of the same things that you're dealing with are coming across are the same things that I deal with on teams here. But it's really cool. So it's great that you give back to the community like that, you know, and share what you're learning on your journey. So it's pretty awesome.
You know, it's really therapeutic to write, and it also, I find when I'm stumbling through something I'm trying to write, I realize I don't know it nearly as well as I thought I did.
Yeah.
So it's been useful not only for me, but it's just nice to get back.
Yeah, it really does help you sharpen your sort of message or your way of thinking when you actually have to like write it down, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it really does, no doubt.
Yeah, it's awesome. Cool. So one of the questions we asked is, how did you hear about the Agile Uprising Coalition? Was it through me? I can't remember. Did you hear about it through another way?
You know, I don't remember if it was you or if it was Andy Clef. It was okay. One of the two.
Okay.
One of you is
one of the Andys. I go.
Yeah, and then I went and checked it out, and I signed up, and I posted on there many times. When we were looking for a Scrum Master before, we found one.
Good.
It took us 600 resumes before I was willing to pull the trigger on any of them.
Holy cow, wow.
And some other stuff up there, too. It's a great website.
Yeah. So how did you, when you first heard about it, you went in, I think you signed up. What's your impression? Like, have you interacted? I mean, have you gotten to connect with people maybe who you wouldn't have sort of otherwise?
Oh, definitely. There's a number of people I've run into. It's interesting, the interweb of LinkedIn and Agile Coalition, yeah. Twitter. One way or the other, I've found people through that circle. And I'm sure that some of the Agile Uprising people, like, then later connected with on Twitter and LinkedIn, like yourself and... Yeah. And Andy Clef started out on LinkedIn. It was actually another one of the Scrum Masters that I work with. And mm-hmm. I mentioned him to me. I read some of his stuff, and I'm like, oh, this guy's awesome. I need to get to know him.
Yeah, he's a pretty awesome dude. I know that you've been really active lately on all the LinkedIn forums. I know whenever I log in and, you know, whatever, the Scrum Master forum or the, you know, Agile Coaching group, you know, I always see it kind of pop up and weighing in your opinion. And I think that's a really awesome thing. I mean, because that takes time for sure. But it's a great way to give back. I think when you read a lot of those things, what's missing a lot of those questions, like, it's like context, and, you know, everybody's context is different. But a lot of what you write is very very helpful, I think, to the folks who ask those questions. And so it's pretty cool that you're so active in that community as well. So it's cool. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, so, you know, being so active on LinkedIn and a part of the Agile Uprising Coalition site and on Twitter. And I just saw one of your articles picked up by Stefan Walters, I think, Age of Products, which is pretty awesome. So, but like, you know, are there ways that we as an Agile Uprising sort of group can improve what the coalition offers? You know, do you like it? I mean, is there stuff that you can kind of, being involved in so many different things, like, is there anything that you would change?
That's such a hard one, Dan. You don't know what's worth improving until it's been improved. You're like, oh, look at that simple little knob I just turned.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. I mean, the most important part is just consistency. And I'm thinking of my own experience as a blogger. And when I started, I'm like, how are people going to read this? How are they going to find it? How are they going to learn about it? Are they even going to want to read it once they read it? Is it going to make any sense? Is it going to resonate with them?
Right.
And I found over time, it's just consistency and willingness to explore and try new things, putting new things online, offering up new channels to get in touch with people. Colleen Johnson was out here in San Jose. I met her when she talked about Kanban.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah.
Great talk. I learned a lot from her.
Yeah.
So I can't think of anything in particular. It really is just all about consistency and experimentation, and you've been doing it. So I wish I could offer up some brilliant ideas for you.
Now, well, you're part of one of the new experiments that we got going on right now. I mean, this idea of a member spotlight, actually talking one-on-one with practitioners out in the field who are sort of living it, kind of like we are. So thanks for being a part of an experiment. Several years back, I was at, like, two lives ago, I went to this conference, and I wish I remember the dude's name who wrote this book. I'm looking at my bookshelf. I might even have it over there. But he wrote this book called Absolute Honesty. And the whole concept of it was, like, creating an organization where everybody was, like, was just uber honest, like, all the time. So there was, like, no bullshit, like, whatsoever. There was no political nonsense going on. And creating an environment where people felt comfortable to not only give negative feedback, but give positive feedback as well, right? And say, like, dude, like, what you did was so great. Or, you know, this work you did, really, really awesome. Or maybe we should move this person from this team to this team because it's really not working out over here. Like, so many of those conversations just don't happen. And a lot of it is fear, maybe, you know, and I think you hit it, you know, on a really important thing. Being honest and having that environment of trust is, it's rare for sure. But it's absolutely important if organizations kind of want to get up to the next level of things. So that's huge. So what about, so, you know, the community of Agile, it's, I don't know if you've probably seen stuff on the interwebs lately on LinkedIn and Twitter about sort of people in the community saying, like, my flavor of Agile is better than yours. And you know, Kanban's better than Scrum, and, you know, SAFe is the worst thing ever. And you got to just, you know, less or enterprise Scrum, whatever the flavor is. What's your thought on that? What you see in the community?
And I saw a quote not long ago. I think I put it on my Twitter feed as well. It's not you versus me. It's chocolate versus vanilla. and I like that because it's true. I mean, it's not everybody likes something different. It's not about something personal. It's just about a preference. Yeah. And as far as SAFe goes, I've never experienced it. But for my own particular style, it doesn't fit with me. And that's okay. And when it comes to Scrum, I mean, that's, I think, often one of the biggest threats in the community is a lot of people treat Scrum as a religion, and it's not. It's just a framework that's simple and straightforward and easy to understand. And for some people, it will work. And for other people, it won't. And for some organizations, it'll work. And for others, it won't. Yeah. So, you know, it's, again, it's not you versus me. It's chocolate versus vanilla. And we need to remind each other that. And I often get caught up in it myself as well. It's easy to make a stance and it's easy to take a stance, but it's more important to understand the underlying principles and ideas, because every single Agile idea out there has something that you can borrow from it that you can add to your tool belt.
Yeah. That's cool. So what do you think? So in terms of threats or opportunities that we have as a community, is that one how we interact with each other and sort of the idea of pragmatism versus being dogmatic and being open to grow and not being so tied to, hey, this is what I think is best. So this is what's best for everybody. I mean, is that a threat?
Yeah. And I think it really comes down to something I borrowed from Mike Cohn in one of his, part of a series on Front Row Agile. Mm-hmm. Is this idea of, I could be wrong. And you've got to remind yourself of that mantra very, very often. Yeah. I could be wrong. Don't get swept up in your own rightness to not consider somebody else's point of view. Shut up and listen, and you might find out something that you didn't know, and you might even find out you're wrong, because there was something else I've learned. Let me ask you a question. How does it feel to be wrong?
Yeah, not very good, right? Yeah.
Well, actually, that's a trick question. Because yeah. There's a difference between knowing that you're wrong and being wrong. So how does it feel to be wrong? It feels just the same as being right. That's because true. You know that you're wrong. So I forget where I picked that up. I learned that
that's true, yeah.
A long time ago. Yeah. So you might be wrong and not even know that you're wrong. So it feels the same as being right. So maybe you should take a step back from your own egotism or your own intellect to consider somebody else's idea.
Yeah. I you know, I have to say, in personal experience, I mean, this summer, I was working with a Scrum Master who had a little bit different sort of view on things than I did. And for a period of time, I had a hard time because I was so focused on sort of the differences, and I didn't allow myself to sort of step back and sort of think about, well, you know, there's a reason why he's attacking these problems this particular way. I was just focused on the way he was doing it versus trying to understand the why. And it made me feel really uncomfortable because I knew I was doing something wrong, like from an agilist perspective, right? You know, and but it's hard. And I think it's something that we have to, you know, remind ourselves and continually try to be very self-aware of how we're acting and how we're responding, both in voice and in the way we write, and then how we communicate with each other. So that's a really good thing. What else do you think going on in the community, you know, provides an opportunity or threat to sort of just Agile sort of continuing its momentum forward?
How do I say this? Have you ever tried to, so let's imagine you're dating. Are you married, Andy?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to buy a gym membership for your wife?
No.
It's a terrible idea. I tried that once. completely terrible idea.
Yes. My
point is that many times we get so swept up in solving people's problems, but who cares about what problems you think you should solve as a Scrum Master and Agile coach? What matters is the problems they think they should solve.
Right.
So for my example, it would be easy that if my ex-girlfriend had bought a gym membership and I go, let's go to the gym together because now I support you in this problem you want to solve. That's an entirely different approach than going, here, let me buy you a gym membership for Christmas. I'm sure you're going to love this.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful about solving people's problems. It's mm-hmm. easy to think that the problems we think are important are the problems they should be solving. And it sort of fits into that example you mentioned a minute ago, that with some of the Scrum Masters I work with, I have to be careful as well because I think I have the right answer. But mm-hmm. just because I have the right answer doesn't mean I should give it. Right. I should let them go their own way. And you know, they're on their own journey. It's not mine.
Yeah, I just, there's been, I think it might have been in a post on the Coalition site, but it was the idea of inflicting versus inviting Agile, meaning, you know, you're coming into an organization saying, everything you're doing is wrong, we're going to do it this way, right?
Yeah.
But when you do that, just like you were saying, you're telling the girlfriend that she's out of shape or whatever, or worse, right? Which is not exactly what she wants to hear. So it's like you're going into an organization saying, hey, you have to do all these things differently. You're basically by default telling them that what they're doing today is wrong. And in their mind, they're not doing I mean, they might know things aren't great, but they're not thinking everything they're doing is wrong. So it's certainly taking that approach is likely to be met in a little bit of resistance, if not a lot of resistance.
Absolutely. And as soon as you tell somebody that they're doing everything wrong, they're probably not going to be that interested in listening to you.
No, they shut off, right?
Yeah, if you listen to them and just, you know, just shut up and listen, ask them questions, mm-hmm. get to understand their position. At some point, you might be able to touch on something that they're passionate about solving and then focus in on that and figure out how they can solve it and then figure out how you can support them.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot about, you know, the difference between of coaching versus consulting and even mentoring a little bit. I mean, when you sort of enter that coach mode, you're less really about solving the problem for them, but really starting to ask questions and get them to come up with their own solution on their own, just through a little bit of inquisitive inquiry, right? And that's, I mean, if we took that approach with the way we implement Agile in organizations, I think that would kind of go a long way.
And I've noticed a lot of people in the community are looking for the right answer. And they want to, here, can you give me the solution? And there isn't one.
Yep.
The solution is with your team. They're the people who have the answers.
Yep.
Stop expecting the Agile community to give it to you. We don't have it because everything is contextual.
Right, right. It's true. Well, that's awesome. So I want to sort of shift gears again and give you the opportunity to sort of to plug anything that you want to plug. I already mentioned your blog, which is, again, it's spikesandstories.com. Is that right, Tanner?
Right, spikesandstories.com.
That's awesome. Yeah, so anybody who's listening, definitely go and subscribe to that and check it out. I was actually just looking at it this morning, and you have you've been writing a lot this year in particular. You got tons of good information out there, so definitely go check out Spikes and Stories. What else? Anything else that you want to plug, whether local to California or whatever?
We've got a ton of job openings at study.com right now. I believe we're up to about 15 different job openings. And for a 100-person company, that's pretty intense.
Wow. What type of folks are you looking for?
Anything from product owners to software engineers at the moment. Even people with a quality background. And we hire only the best. So if you're interested, get in touch with me. You can find me at spikesandstories.com, or you can email me at tanner@study.com. There's a number of ways to get in touch with me. So if anybody's interested in any of these job openings we have, and if you want to work for a kick-ass agile shop in the Valley, this is a chance.
That's awesome. Do you guys have any, is everybody who works for study.com in the office with you, or do you have people remote spread around?
You know, that's one of the best things. I love working for this company. Yeah. With the exception of, I think, one or two people, everybody is in our Mountain View office. So awesome. Everybody is co-located. We sit together as teams, and we eat together as an organization. Often we have happy hours every week. We got a Christmas party coming up soon. We do big events where we'll be going to Lake Tahoe as a company and with our spouses and stuff here in the coming months when we reach one of our goals. Cool. So great company to work for, a lot of fun, and a great mission.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was looking at it before the call. I sort of opened up the website and was kind of looking at it, and it does seem like a great mission. You know, it's pretty awesome. So thanks for sharing that. Anything else?
Oh yeah, I mean we got a great program going on right now. What would you say if I told you that I could give you a college degree for free?
Yeah. Yes.
We have a program with Mountain View right now because that's where we're located. We have a program called Mountain View Working Scholars, to where anybody who works or lives in Mountain View, we will sponsor your college education for free. Our website, study.com, offers college credit for almost the entire bachelor's. And then you finish off a few classes at another college, usually at Thomas Edison State University. It's an online college. So you take those few classes. The Mountain View Chamber of Commerce pays for those few classes at Thomas Edison. Mm-hmm. And we give you a free account with us where you can take like two college classes a month, which is usually $200 a month. So yeah, college, bachelor's degree for free. It's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. Just one more question about study.com, because I'm always interested in organizations, and I think maybe some of the listeners might be interested in organizations as well. I mean, where do people, like, what's the demographic of folks that are coming to work at study.com? Are they, you think startup, how old is the company? It's not that old, is it?
The company's been around for like 12 years, so
it's not a spring chicken. Yeah.
No, our founders are freaking awesome. They own 100% of the company, so there's no venture capitalists getting in their way.
Okay,
and cool. That's part of the reason it's been around for a while is they had a different mission back in their early days.
Right.
It wasn't until about, I think about 3 or 4 years ago that they started the Academy service, which is what we were just talking about.
Right.
Where you pay a monthly subscription for homeschooling or college education, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a newer thing, but the company's been around for a while. And the people who work there, like I said, about 100 of us, young company, a lot of young people. I'm an old man at 40. But I'm getting a little bit older now.
Don't tell me that's old, Tanner. Come on.
young. Come on. Yeah, I know. The founder, when I sat down with him after I'd been there for like 2 months, he asked me, he was like, so what's the biggest surprise for you? And I'm like, how few wedding rings there are in this building. It's freaking crazy. So there wasn't many of us that's married, but we just had this last December, like 3 babies born in the company. So they're getting a little bit old.
Very good. So you mentioned before, tying it back to the honesty and trust thing. I mean, so do you feel that the company has a culture of honesty and trust, and where do you think that comes from?
They do and they don't. So that's something that I've helped a lot with, and it's not because it didn't exist. It's because, part of our job is never being satisfied with the status quo, and good enough never is. So because we bring a lot of awareness to it, and because there's a lot of self-awareness with it, everybody goes out of their way. And it's very easy to say these things, but trying to do them and embody them, even for myself, can be hard. So, for example, our founder, Adrian, great guy, humble guy. I remember when we had a Scrum Master join, and the new Scrum Master, Adrian stopped by his desk to go say hi. And the new Scrum Master was like, and who are you again? that's how humble Adrian is. Great guy, really straightforward guy. You can talk to him about anything. So he doesn't announce who he is. And the same thing applies to Ben, our other founder. Mm. Both of them, I mean, they're trying to hand their baby over to other people. That's really hard for them. So I can appreciate how hard it is.
Absolutely.
So even with them, even with that high level of trust, it's still a problem from time to time. But when it happens, they're willing to hear about it and listen and work on it.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like a great place to work. And a really, like you said, a really important mission. So check it out, study.com. All right. So the last thing I want to do, when I was sort of thinking about questions to ask, I remember there used to be this TV show called Inside the Actors Studio or something like that. And they used to ask like a whole bunch of random questions to participants and ask them to sort of answer them pretty quickly. And so this is our version of that, like the lightning round. So I'll ask you a question, and you can kind of respond. And if you want to add some commentary, you can. If not, then we'll just move on to the next question. So,
okay.
All right. So first one. So if you had to choose Scrum or Kanban?
Kanban. Because it's simple.
Say it again.
Because it's simple. Just so freaking simple.
Simple, right. Who wins in a game of Agile Jeopardy? David Anderson, Jeff Sutherland, or Joanna Rothman?
Jeff,
okay.
Smart guy. Well,
smart guy. Yes, he is. What is your favorite Agile term?
People.
What's your least favorite Agile term?
Oh, time box. Oh my God, Agile.
Time box, why?
Because as soon as somebody says time box, what they're trying to say is, can you lower your story point estimate? Because I just want it to be done.
All right. I'm just going to remove that term from my kit.
I've used it before myself. Don't get me wrong. It's primarily when I hear it come from product owners. That's when it drives me nuts.
There you go. Time box. Hey, at least your product owners understand what a time box is. Whether for the right reasons or not, that's a different story. But.
True.
And then the last one we have, so if you had to give one piece of advice to someone who's brand new to the Agile community, what would that be?
Never stop learning. I know the certification says certified Scrum Master, but you are neither certified nor a master. So start learning and start failing.
That's so true. Well, Tanner, I really, really appreciate your time. Again, Happy New Year to you. It's awesome to be able to not only talk to you, but see you in person. You know, again, I've read your blog, Spikes and Stories. You put out a lot of great information, and please keep it up, because not only myself, but a lot of people, I think, around the world are getting a lot of benefit from it. You know, best of luck to you in the new year. And I really, really appreciate your time today. So thanks for talking with me.
Absolutely. Back at you, Andy. And if you need anything at all, you know where to find me.
Thanks very much. So for all the listeners out there, please continue to check out agileuprising.com. If you want to join the coalition, we have a great discussion forum at coalition.agileuprising.com. And thanks, and talk to everybody soon.